From WOSU Public Media, this is Small Joys. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, and this is the final episode of Season 2, which has been a wonderful season. I've gotten to talk to some folks I know very well, some folks I did not know before and became fans of, and I got to deepen my understanding of how to move through the world and move through our days with more intention, with more care, and with more grace for ourselves and for everyone around us. Today, my guest is artist, writer, musician, and one of my punk heroes, Regan Buchanan, who was born in Erie, Pennsylvania, but has called Columbus home for several years now. Much of her work consists of portraits of Black writers and musicians, which is a theme she explores in her debut comic book, The Secret History of Black Punk, Record Zero. This was a live conversation, and it was recorded at a Small Joys event on May 30th at the WOSU headquarters. It was my first time being in the building, and it is beautiful. Or being in the new building. Of course, I'd spent some time in the old building, but it was my first time being in the new building, which is stunning. We talk a lot about the history of punk, how we discover new music, and why getting ice cream near a cemetery is not the best first date. A quick note for sensitive or younger listeners, there are a few curse words in this episode, which are probably my fault, so I apologize in advance. Without further ado, here's my talk with Regan Buchanan. When working on and when researching and when diving into the process of making the work that went into The Secret History of Black Punk, how did you determine for yourself what was secret in a very real, tangible, tactile way, or what was secret in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, and the way that like Black folks have secrets that are ours and not the rest of the world's?
Yeah, I think that when I was calling it The Secret History of Black Punk, it was kind of like a joke for myself that other people hadn't really explored it in a way that I wanted to read about it or wanted to know about Black punk. And so it was not necessarily that it was really a secret, but that, you know, maybe people didn't care enough about it to present it. I'm not saying nobody cares about it, but didn't care to like present it in an easy format the way that I would have wanted it to. Or, you know, people learn about bands through going to shows and talking to each other.
Yeah.
And these are some bands that, you know, I wish maybe people would have told me about. And, you know, so I had to find out for myself. Maybe I'm lazy and I just want to be told things and I was just angry about it. But so that's kind of why I named it The Secret History of Black Punk. But I do think that there are a lot of bands that people don't know about, or, you know, bands that people aren't aware have Black members. And so, yeah, I just wanted to collate it in that way.
There's like, so when I was growing up on the scenes I was on, I was lucky to have this kind of, almost like a whisper network of these exchanges where Black folks would make this is in the height of, I'm aging myself, but as I'm looking around the room, we're like, many of us are of a similar era or older. So this is like of, this is like when Napster was a thing, you know what I mean? And like, you could burn CDs illegally, but still, like, no one knew it was illegal. You know what it was. And or, like, even if we knew it was illegal, we didn't give a fuck, you know? And so there was this kind of thing where I felt like at shows, I would just get handed mixtapes or mix CDs. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of how I found my way to a lot of bands, particularly out the Midwest, with Black folks or Black members. And it kind of created this weird dissonance for me, because my pals, who were all like Black punks as well, would be very into these bands, but then I would try to go on like message boards and find out about them, and people would be very either disparaging about them or they didn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that, because we talked a bit about message boards in the green room too, the dark side of message boards.
Yes.
Do you think that now, because I know you spend time there a bit, like from a research standpoint, not for like your own fun, or maybe, I don't know, but do you feel like there have been adequate correctives in terms of how the music is received from the message board era to now, where it's easier to kind of get the information about bands and get people to kind of sink into the realities of the music and history of these bands?
So I guess I would have to correct you. While I have done research on message boards lately, I actually was never on message boards, you know, the way that people were finding music and stuff like that. I didn't know about them. I am very technology averse, so I didn't have a cell phone, I think, until I was maybe, I don't know, 23 or something like that. I didn't have a computer in my home growing up. So the first time I was like on a computer in any like real way was in college. So I actually wasn't on message boards so much.
How do you then, as someone who did have this aversion to technology and the kind of routes that like a lot of people that I grew up around went to discover music were not always accessible to you, how do you, I don't know, I'm curious in like music discovery was always just part of my childhood because of how I grew up with like four older siblings and parents who had separate records, this type shit. How has discovery been for you? I don't want to say later in life, like you're 90 years old, you know, but like
I might be.
That is true, actually. You could be anywhere between, from what I'm learning now, you could be anywhere between 28 and 90.
Yes, which, I'm not being very truthful about my age.
Which I think, like, I joked about, like, wanting to go to bed on time tonight, and I mentioned being old, but what I meant, like, I'm like a spiritual elder.
Okay.
But not in, like, not in a way that comes with wisdom, just, like, straight up.
Creaky and.
Wanting to be in my fucking house. You know what I mean? Like, that is. That is, those are the limits of my spiritual elderness.
Mm-hmm.
But so as an elder, how has discovery kind of been for you? With, I mean, we talked a bit about like how you came across some bands that have been new to you in the past 5-10 years. How has that kind of seeking been for you? And do you still find ways now to seek out excitement in new bands that you maybe did not know before? Are you burned out on the seeking?
No, I think research is my favorite thing. Like, I'm addicted to research. I'm always looking for new things. And like you said, message boards, that's where a lot of people found music. Skateboard videos,
yeah.
People found a lot of music through that. My older brother was in a punk band, and he's a lot older than me. Like, he's 11 years older than me, and he left home. He like ran away from home when he was like 16, and he went to Pittsburgh, and then he, you know, came back with like a whole like head to foot tattoos or whatever, and like a big mohawk, and you know, so he would send us like mixtapes, and he would send us like flyers and stuff like that. And so that's how I got into punk. That was the beginning. I think I was like 11 or 12. And then after that, it was just, he had like a huge record collection. So I would do, like, I would go to Pittsburgh, and I would kind of go through his record collection. I remember finding the X-ray specs and like knowing, like seeing the picture and being like, oh no, like I haven't seen a black punk rocker yet. And like playing it in the winter loudly while my brother was at work. So I'm like 15 and I'm like, oh, somebody left me alone. And I was pretty overprotected. So I'm like, oh, I can like listen to music loud, and I'm gonna walk down to the store and get like a pop or whatever. Yeah, that's how I was. But but I would listen to it like super loudly and like, you know, learn the words and stuff like that. And then go to shows. Like, I would see my brother's band a lot and like go to shows and like meet you know, people who I'm still friends with to this day, like Oyo Ellis, who was in Killer of Sheep in Pittsburgh. And then I think it was just, you know, after that, it was really being around people who would tell me about music or whatever. I told you that I discovered Death when the record came out. Alexi, who's in the front row right here, was the one who told me about Death, and I got it from Magnolia Thunder Pussy. And, you know, so it was just, you know, kind of like a connection of like talking to people. Right now, I do actively search out bands by rereading like the old books, like Please Kill Me and American Hardcore, and finding out, you know, there were people that I wasn't aware of. Like, when you read American Hardcore, they talk about Spot. But when I first read American Hardcore, I did not know who Spot was.
Yeah.
And now I do. So I, you know, can find like a little bit of research like that. You know, I did not know Void had a black member.
Yeah.
I didn't know about, so Dave Grohl was in a band called Scream with a Skeeter, who is a black member. Yep. So things like that, like I just didn't know. So I just like go through like old things and kind of research. I talk to people. There's a guy named Bim. He's in a band called Obnox in Cleveland. And I just called him and talked to him for like a couple hours about like, he's played with like Carla Mad Dog from the Controllers. And he'll, he's played with everybody, but he'll just, if you let him talk for like a long time, like all this stuff will come out. And I don't, that's not my knowledge. Like I don't remember it, you know, which is part of the reason why I like do these books and zines and stuff like that. I need to remember, but then you start to know other things about, you know, your city and like the punk rockers here. I know there's a girl here named Val Glenn who's in a band called Time and Temperature.
Absolutely.
She has a brother
who
was in a punk band back in the day. I wasn't around when he was, I think they might have been broken up by then. You know what I mean? But yeah, so like all different ways, mostly talking to people and, you know, groups online. There's a person named Danny who has a Facebook group that's POC Punk. And I think I learned a lot.
I question if it's aged well, although I suppose nothing aged well, but I reread Please Kill Me like once every other year.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously like some parts of it are rough.
Oh yeah.
But I still find real value in it. I think oral history is a really hard genre.
It is rough. And sometimes I go between being upset that there were, you know, the black punk rockers were left out of it.
Yep.
I also realize that it's really kind of, I don't know, a history of like a few people, like Iggy Pop. And
like I feel like there's parts of Please Kill Me where I'm just like, this is maybe just like a Richard Hell biography.
Yeah. Right. Which, I do like how Iggy Pop fully admits to the origin of his sound being blues based and wanting to create something that wasn't like appropriative of black culture. I mean, that's what he's, you know, whatever you think about it, that's what his message is, but sort of like in the same vein, like, but his own, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I do appreciate how that is written down in his own words. It's there. He said it.
It's one of those like intent versus actual result kind of things, I think, with a lot of those bands. Like MC5 too would be like, you know, we're from Detroit and we don't want to take from Detroit, like the black Detroit rock, but it's like we hear the music and it's like, well.
Yeah, I have a worse opinion.
Yeah. Thanks for trying, I guess. It reminds me of, have you ever read the Lester Bangs essay, The White Noise Supremacist?
I have that on my list to read, and I have, I guess I probably should be embarrassed that I haven't read it. I read parts of it.
It's parts of it,
And I think it's one of those things that like, I've set aside for a time where I really want to get angry.
Yeah.
But I usually don't.
You don't want to get angry?
Force my... No, like, right. My life is traumatic enough.
Yeah.
Like...
Well...
So it's like, I just haven't picked it up.
If you ever want to read it and get angry and, like, commiserate, I've read it many times. And I'm also, like, somewhat of a Lester Bangs disciple, although I am also, like, intensely frustrated by a lot of his work. So if you ever read it and you want to be angry... We can, like, be in community.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if knowing that, like, I can talk to you about it after I read it, or you, like, get some tea and, like, you know, maybe that would be, like, less. I probably shouldn't protect myself from, like, something from the 70s, but from Lester Bangs. I'm not afraid of him.
Yeah, well, yeah. How do I become unafraid of Lester Bangs?
Stick with me, kid.
I'm hyped to talk about your artistic process because I think the perception. So I feel like that I am an artist where the perception of me is that I produce a lot very quickly.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am somewhat confused. Not confused. Confused is a bad word. But I look at your artistic practice and it's like, I feel like some things are happening very quickly, but there's no way they can be happening very quickly because I get, like, I have, Reagan made this beautiful Octavia Butler piece that I have in my house right now. It's actually not in my house because it's being framed, but once it gets framed, it'll be in my house. And when I got it, I opened it up and I looked at it and I was like, it would take me 100 years to make this. Like, literally, not just because I don't have any art, like, talent, but I think if I had the talent, it would also take me 100 years because you are an artist who, it seems like, works very intensely around detail, like really tactile detail. And so I'm wondering what your process is like, not on some shit where it's like, tell me how long it takes to make a piece.
I don't know.
Right, because no one really clocks hours like that. Well, yeah. Maybe some people do, but I don't. But in terms of just maybe what I'm interested in is not the actual time, but the level of rigor and focus that it takes to get to a place where you can be as detailed as you tend to be with your making.
Mm-hmm.
And like that part of the process, how you get to that place and how you stay in that place.
How I stay in the place of like being able to do
like just staying focused enough to
I'm not focused. Like,
really?
Yes.
This is refreshing to hear.
Well, it's weird because I don't really know what people, you know, think about me and the artwork and stuff like that, but I have heard that I like work really fast, but I don't feel as though I work really fast. I do not have a proper day.
Right.
So, I will work and then stop working and then work again. Like, I used to joke kind of that I would do like the easy parts and then I would like do the medium parts. And then before I did the hard parts, I would have to do like a lot of stuff. Like, I'd have to call my sister.
Yeah.
I have to like, you know, call my mom. I'd have to like drink a shot of tequila. Like, I'd have to like mess around and listen to videos and sing 90s R&B in the mirror, and then I could go back and do the hard parts or whatever. But I was taught to draw for accuracy in a very fast way, so the line drawings don't take very long. And then with the inking, I think that I have just sort of impatience with it not being done or whatever, and that might drive me to like work faster sometimes, because I'm like on this side of the page and I'm like, what about that side of the page? What's going on over there? That's really blank over there. You want to go over there? And then I'm like, all right, I'll go over there. All right. And they're like, what about the middle of the page or whatever? So maybe, but I do take a lot of breaks and get distracted a lot. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like my day, you know, it starts in the morning and it goes, you know, till the morning. So
here's how much I love Reagan's work. I don't know, was anyone here raised Muslim? So like, you're not supposed to have, I actually don't know if this is another face, but you're not supposed to have like images of yourself in your home. But Reagan made this beautiful piece of me and my dear friend and mentor Scott Woods, and it's in my house. And so what I'm saying, yeah, I'm going to hell because of you. I mean, I was going to be there. It's 50-50. I was like going to be there anyway. You know what I mean? Like, this is
because of mine. Can you put that in a book?
I think that this is one of those things where like the scale was tilting towards definitely hell. And then this, the photo of me or the drawing of me is just like the P that gets put on the side. And then that tilts the scale to heavy. So while, if I get to take the drawing to hell, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
It feels like if one goes to hell, you should be able to take like some belongings.
Yeah, you gotta put some stuff
design,
in the cave.
Design your room.
Make it comfortable.
You've been in Columbus for 20 years?
I think so, or 10, depending again.
Depending again on how old we believe you are. Anywhere between 10 and 70 years.
I feel like today is the day that I'm making the commitment to lie about my age.
How did you arrive at that point?
I know I have to do it at some point.
Yeah.
And it just kind of slipped out today. So I think I'm going to go with it. Zora Neale Hurston said that she was 10 years younger than she was. And
always.
She was fine. So I think I'll be okay. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, she wasn't fine.
She was great, though.
She was great. She was very good.
Yeah, you're right. No, I'm wrong.
No, you're right. I mean, it depends on how we determine. She was fine from a standpoint of the work.
Yeah.
But she like died broke because the, you know, like patriarchal ideas about how black people should be portrayed on the page. Anyway, that's not because she lied about her age, though.
No. I think she doesn't, I don't think she, you know, cared that she died broke. I think it was like she said she was going to do that. She never, she wanted adventure, not money. I know this is not a Zora Neale Hurston podcast, but
it should be though.
I really love her.
I do too.
This is all these tattoos over here. This is like Zora Neale Hurston stuff. I got like the sailor tattoo.
I peeped that, and I didn't. I'm not a big like ask about tattoos kind of guy.
Yeah, because I'm not one of those dudes. Sometimes you don't even know what they are.
But I saw that. I saw the like tea cake one, and I was like, it's a Hurston thing.
Yeah,
but I didn't want to be all like Hurston on your arm.
No, yep. I got literary tattoos. I got a Gwendolyn Brooks tattoo on my leg.
What's the Brooks tattoo? I mean, I don't need to see it, but like, what's the deal with it?
It's Seven at the Golden Shovel.
Really?
Yeah. The one that I think she is tired of people liking because she's got a body of work.
Right.
That's way bigger than that.
I wish I would have known that you were... I mean, I didn't
you
know
met you... her like recently, didn't you? Or maybe Gwendolyn not.
Brooks?
Maybe I saw a picture.
Oh, Nikki Giovanni.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I met Nikki Giovanni recently.
Okay.
Gwendolyn Brooks, definitely dead.
Okay. Can we delete this part?
Although you made me think for a moment, like, is Gwendolyn Brooks dead?
I feel embarrassed.
I met Nikki Giovanni.
I knew I was going to do something like this.
I met Nikki Giovanni recently, and it was wild because I had... Now we're talking about me, and I feel bad.
No, this is about this. I'm asking the questions now.
I met Nikki Giovanni, and I had...
Sorry.
I had this copy of a Nikki Giovanni book called Black Disappointment from like the 60s, like a first edition from 1967 or 66, I think is when it came out. And I met Nikki Giovanni and I was like, will you sign my book?
Yeah.
And she said, which book do you have? And I said, well, funny you should ask because I have this book from 1960, whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that's not one of my best.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, I mean, I'll tell you what, if you sign it, it will be one of the best books in my collection. So now I have that book in my...
Which one of your books would you say that about?
That it isn't one of my best?
Yeah. Are you allowed to tell people?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I did the best I could at the time writing Go Ahead in the Rain, but I would have written some of it differently now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of all my books. I think, like, Little Devil in America, I think that I will die feeling like I did the best I could, and that book is still very strong.
It was cool that you wrote about Fupu in there.
Oh, yes. I'm such a big fan. There's a punk band. We're not. I know that Michael's over there, like, please explain the things you're talking about. Like, Michael has a producer.
Oh, too. I'm sorry.
No, I forgot to. Fupu, there's a band called Fuck You Pay Us that is really great, and they're recording a new record, and I'm really excited about that. And they're this black punk band, and I adore them. And I saw them live, and it changed my life. And then I wrote about them in Little Devil in America. It was one of those things where I was like, they'll never see this, because when you write about people who are living, you sometimes think they're never going to see it. But of course they did.
Yeah, a lot of people, I feel like, have been really visibly, you know, appreciative or nice or, you know, for, you know, me writing about them, even though I'm just like some person, you know what I mean, that nobody knows.
Well,
that's just like writing this stuff.
Do you still feel like you're some person that nobody knows? Is that an accurate representation of how you consider yourself?
Yes. Who know? You know what I mean?
Everyone, look at everyone here.
Everyone here knows you.
I was at. I'm telling you this. I'm going to tell you something.
Uh-huh.
That I wasn't going to tell you because, but.
Well, I'm glad you're going to tell me in front of everybody.
We should take this on the road. We should do like a...
Can we? I have to like try to make money off of this book.
I don't... So a thing about me is, again, spiritual elder. I don't like leaving my house after I've transitioned into what I like to call bedtime clothes. Like if I do like step one of the skincare routine and have on like soft pants.
By the way, I want to know what your skincare routine is because I've heard you talk about it and I...
Yeah. Do you have an hour?
No. It sounds like a no.
But on Wednesday, I had on sweatpants. I was at my house and our dear brother Duarte, who, you know, I know many of us in here love deeply, was like, I'm at Streetlight, you know what I mean? I'm putting up the show, come through. And this is like at 9 p.m., 9:30 p.m. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I got to go. You know, it's Stuart. I love him. Like, love him deeply. Would have maybe walked to Streetlight Guild if I could not have driven there. I mean, to be fair, Streetlight Guild's like a half mile from my house. But nonetheless, So I pulled up a streetlight. It's like me, Scott Duarte, and we were all talking so lovingly about not only your work, but just how I was talking lovingly about how I believe you to be like an archiver, an archivist of a. It's interesting that you love Hurston. I also love Hurston, mm-hmm. but it feels like you and Hurston are working in the same mode of archiving the present, mm-hmm. and like doing it in a way that preserves the realities of that present, even though that is a present that has been manipulated or co-opted or whitewashed or whatever. And so I would like to say that. See, there's no question there, but I think that you are. I mean, I know that you know this, but also like, who cares who knows whom? You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. Well, I guess I just meant that, like, you know. For example, we've talked about James Spooner, who yeah. is the documentarian behind the Afropunk movie. And when I was on social media, which I don't use it a lot, or I'm only on Instagram. You know, he reached out to me and was like, "Hello, I'm James Spooner," and you know, I just wanted to say hi and. If there's anything going on in your neck of the woods, you know, that I'd be interested in, just let me know. If anyone would be interested in what I'm doing, shoot them my way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people don't have to do that.
Yeah.
People can, you know, sort of, you know, there's an overlap between what you do, what I do, and Spooner does. You both could be like, stay over there. Or, you know what I mean? People don't have to be appreciative. People could be, you know, upset that I make little mistakes or whatever, or upset at the way that I draw them if they don't like it. You know what I mean? And so I just really appreciate that, you know, and the bands repost things and say thank you and stuff like that.
Do you feel like you've settled into, we talked a bit about the kind of clumsiness of Columbus's art scene, or maybe you did not say that, I'm wording it in this way where it's like you don't, when it comes to recognition or adequate support or respect for what you're making, it sometimes comes the long and hard way or the long and late way.
Mm-hmm.
Even for someone who, like Amina, who's Art City's greatest artist, you know, like did not get that when she was alive, right? Mm-hmm. How have you, what has moving through Columbus's art scene been like for you in the kind of evolution of support, even if it's not institutional support, just like community support, which I think for me at least has superseded and been more vital to my artistic growth than institutional support. But what has that been like for you? How has that evolved?
In right now, I have a lot of support, and the people that I have support from are like genuinely behind what I do, genuinely concerned about my well-being. And participate in, you know, in supporting, like actively participate in supporting me. And you've mentioned, you know, a couple of them, Duarte, Scott Woods, Brian Moss is like my bestie, but also, you know, my mentor. So there's, I feel like there are a lot of people now who are very supportive. And I feel like it was hard for me to get recognition when I was a little bit younger. At some point I was in music scenes in Columbus, and I would do like gig posters and things like that. And people didn't know what my name was, you know? You know, I applied to art shows at the galleries and stuff like that. I've never gotten into one, you know? People like, for example, Scott Woods in the Streetlight Guild, he's not making you prove yourself to get into his gallery or have a name before he like allows you in. So he does it in a different way, which is again, like supportive of you. So you don't have to impress him. He's trying to give you a platform so that you can, succeed or whatever. And you know, so I felt different in different ways. And the big difference is my supporters are in the Black community, basically. So when I was younger, you know, I was in mostly white punk scenes, and I was in, you know, I was applying to these galleries, like cold applying or whatever. Yeah. And people weren't interested. And they didn't see anything in me. And for, you know, I wasn't important to them or whatever. So that, you know, so I felt differently at different times. A lot of my opportunities do not come from Columbus, or a lot of the jobs that I do, or a lot of the people who, you know, support and pay attention to me, I found through the music scene, but they don't live in Columbus. People contact me, you know, through the social media and stuff like that, and for through seeing my social media page. And I do feel like the more people pay attention to you outside of the city, the more important the city feels you are.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Don't I know it? I would like to dive into that more, but maybe not here.
Yeah. There are exceptions. Like, you know, Andy Downing has always been interested in
We love Andy. Shout out to Andy. Do you still... You're not in a band currently, right? No. Are you ever going to... Do you think you're ever going to be in a band again? I know you had
an era. Yes. If I can pay my rent for an entire year off of art, I will be in a band again.
Like, and just tour? Is that the idea? Like, tour for a year?
No. Like, if I starting from when I signed my lease,
yeah,
in November, if I can go an entire till the next November paying my rent off of art, then I'll start another band, because this is like new for me.
Yeah.
And so
could you tour right now though? Like, or do you have the, because I think for me the problem is I don't want to tour. Like, I mean, like, to some
like
extent,
do you mean like because it's uncomfortable?
It's not even the discomfort for me at this point. Like, because book tours are different than band tours, right?
Okay, I hope so.
Like, band tours... band tours, for me at least, are like... I mean, and you know this. It's like, you know, sleep in the trunk of this vehicle, if you can hear me, or whatever. Sleep in this guitar case. book tours aren't really like that, but I still do not like the rigor of a book. In some ways, I like the camaraderie of a band tour more. Because a book tour, like, you're literally alone. You know what I mean? So, like, after the show.
But you're, like, in hotels and stuff, right?
Yeah, but... So that's nice, because there's a bed.
Yeah.
But you're often, like, after the reading, you're going back to a hotel. So, like, coming from band scenes for me, it was really jarring for me to do a book tour, because it was like, oh, wait, after the show...
What do you do?
I'm just, like, alone. Like, I don't have any kind of, like, comprehensive...
You don't, like, explore the city?
Depends on the... I've seen a lot of cities, you know, because okay. of... I mean, you know, like, you're around, you drive around and you tour.
So, like, I don't drive around. I hate being in my car. I hate driving. I'm not trying to be difficult. Finish. You can finish. You should finish this sentence.
I'm mostly saying that I've seen a lot of cities, and now I'm at a point in my life where I've maybe seen enough.
You need to do the secret parts of the cities. You don't have to.
Well, tell me your secret parts of Columbus. I wonder if ours overlap.
The secret parts of Columbus?
If there are any for you.
No, I stay in my house. But like, I know that there are, because like I'm on some Facebook group that's like secret Columbus things. But I don't pay attention.
You really are. You 100% are in between 20 years old and 90 years old.
I'm from Erie, Pennsylvania. You're lucky that I even, I don't know, got as far as I did.
I love the, like, I know there are secret parts because I'm on a Facebook group.
Because I follow these groups to, like, have interesting things to draw.
Yeah.
If I want to draw scenery. But I don't pay attention to, like, them. Like, I have it in the back of my head that if I was ever interested in finding something weird, I could, like, a date idea or something, I could, like...
Are you a person who enjoys ice cream?
Yes.
Have you ever been to the Dairy Twist?
No.
By the grave? Does anyone know the Dairy Twist on the west side by the graveyard? I feel like that could be... Thank you for the three of you who are... Wait, for real? No one other than that small handful of people? We're in Columbus. You've never been to the Dairy... Thank you. So it's a little ice cream shack.
Near the graveyard.
It's next to a graveyard, which for me is enticing.
No. Are you like a goth? It's fine if you are. I'm just asking.
No matter what happens, please keep that part in.
No, don't. I don't want to be in trouble for everything I say. I'm just starting. This is my career is just starting. I hope.
I feel like I'm goth adjacent.
Okay.
So maybe the Dairy Twist by the graveyard. Are you like averse to graveyards?
No, I was just trying to make jokes, so this would be interesting. I'm not averse. I think we should go get ice cream.
We should go to the Dairy Twist by the grave. It's like.
But we should take photos in the graveyard.
Yeah, I've done it. I mean, trust me, I've done it. I once, if we're talking about the Dairy Twist by the graveyard, I went on a date with a person who was not from the city. And I feel like that's my best mode. When someone, it doesn't have to be like a date. When someone's like, I've never been in the city, show me around. But at this time, it was a date. We went to the Dairy Twist, and she was like, there's a graveyard there. I was like, yeah, you know it. You know what I mean? Like, but she was a little freaked out by death, understandably. I perhaps should have sought some consent before taking her to the graveyard ice cream shack, but I did not. And she was like really disturbed by this.
It's weird because I keep thinking that you're gonna say, like, and there's no way that you would say this, but I have that thing of like holding your breath when you go through a graveyard, like a child.
Yeah.
And so I keep, when you're talking, I just keep thinking she's like, because if you're eating ice cream near the graveyard, you're not like driving by it.
No,
so that's
we
like a long
out.
Time
we
to like hold
up.
Your breath. But there's no way that like your story was going to do that. But for some reason,
it's funny that you bring up holding breath. I did hold my breath waiting for her to call me after the date and it never happened. So
oh.
Nearly died.
Now this is a comedy skit. Yeah.
I guess I should ask it if you thought of a small joy, but if you haven't, that's cool.
Oh, I did.
I can't wait to hear it.
During the pandemic, I was going in between homes, and I ended up at my sister's house a lot, and I was kind of being like, I say au pair because that sounds fancier, for her children, and yeah. So they didn't like have school for a second, and then they, you know, I was helping the youngest one, my nephew Vincent, go to school. And during that time when, you know, nobody could really do anything, he started drawing with me. Yes. And like, it was the cutest thing because he's got an older brother, who's like a lot older than him, and he has a deep voice. And so when Vincent is hanging out with Micaiah, Vincent kind of has a deeper voice. But then when Vincent comes downstairs, sneaks downstairs at like 12 o'clock, he's like, Uncle Meme, can we draw together? Because that's what they call me, Uncle Meme. And it was just like really cute.
Yeah.
And there were like times when like I have an injury that I rap sometimes. And like one day he like wrapped his little hand the same way or whatever. And he was like, so I can be like you and stuff like that. And so I like really bonded with him during the pandemic with like, he's really good at drawing. So so I guess that's a little joy.
That's like a very emotional, I could have
thank
cried.
You. Can you cry?
So thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Reagan.
Thank you.
Everyone have a good night.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Small Joys is a production of WOSU Public Media and part of the NPR Network. The show is produced and edited by Michael DeBonis. Nick Hauser is the Chief Content Director of Digital Media. Thanks to Leticia Wiggins for editorial support. And thank you so much for listening to Season 2 of Small Joys, which for me has been a massive, massive joy, and I hope it's been the same for you. Talk later, everyone.